These may yet overtake our evolution if they reach a sufficient degree of advancement before the critical point already mentioned, which will come in the middle of the fifth revolution. If they do not overtake us by that time, they will have lost touch with our evolution. It was said that man had built his threefold body by the help of others higher than he. But in the previous period there was no coordinating power, the threefold spirit, the ego, was separate and apart from its vehicles. Now the time had come to unite the spirit and the body. Where separated, the higher part became somewhat master over the lower part and over the dense and vital bodies. It formed a sort of animal soul with which the spirit could unite by means of the link of mind. Where there was no division of the desire body, the vehicle was given over to desires and passions without any check, and could therefore not be used as a vehicle within which the spirit could dwell. So it was put under the control of a group spirit which ruled it from without. It became an animal body, and that kind has now degenerated into the body of the anthropoid. Where there was a division of the desire body, the dense body gradually assumed a vertical position, thus taking the spine out of the horizontal currents of the desire world in which the group spirit acts upon the animal through the horizontal spine. The ego could then enter, work in, and express itself through the vertical spine and build the vertical larynx and brain for its adequate expression in the dense body. A horizontal larynx is also under the domination of the group spirit. While it is true that some animals, as the starling, raven, parrot, etc., previously mentioned, are able, because of the possession of a vertical larynx, to utter words, they cannot use them understandingly. The use of words to express thought is the highest human privilege and can be exercised only by a reasoning, thinking entity like man. In the Polarian epoch, man acquired the dense body as an instrument of action. In the Hyperborean epoch, the vital body was added to give power of motion necessary to action. In the Lemurian epoch, furnished incentive to action. In the third, or Lemurian epoch, men cultivated a desire body, a vehicle of passions and emotions, and was then constituted as the animal. Then milk, a product of living animals, was added to his diet, for this substance is most easily worked upon by the emotions. Abel, the man of that time, is described as a shepherd. It is nowhere stated that he killed an animal for food. The third, or Lemurian epoch, presents conditions analogous to the moon period, but denser. The fiery core of the earth is in the center, the boiling, seething water next, and the steamy atmosphere or fire fog outside, for thus God had divided the land from the waters, as Genesis says, the dense moisture from the steam, and the man lived on islands of the forming solid crust scattered in the sea of fire or boiling water. His form was then quite firm and solid, it had a trunk, limbs, and the head was beginning to form, was added, and man brought under the dominion of the archangels. In the far past, when man was in touch with the inner worlds, these organs, pituitary body and pineal gland, were his means of ingress thereto, and they will again serve that purpose at a later stage. They were connected with the involuntary or sympathetic nervous system. Man then saw the inner worlds, as in the moon period and the latter part of the Lemurian and early Atlantean epochs. Pictures presented themselves quite independent of his will. The sense centers of his desire body were spinning around counterclockwise, following negatively the motion of the earth, which revolves on its axis in that direction, as the sense centers of mediums do to this day. In most people these sense centers are inactive, but true development will set them spinning clockwise. The mind was given to man in the Atlantean epoch to give purpose to action, but as the ego was exceedingly weak and the desire nature strong, the nascent mind coalesced with the desire body, the faculty of cunning resulted and was the cause of all the wickedness of the middle third of the Atlantean epoch. In a far distant future, man's desire body will become as definitely organized as are the vital and dense bodies. When that stage is reached, we shall all have the power to function in as we now do in the dense body, which is the oldest and best organized of these bodies of man, being the youngest. In the Hyperborean epoch, before man possessed a desire body, There was but one universal mode of communication, and when has become sufficiently purified, all men will again be able to understand one another, for then the separative race differentiation will have passed away. Was started in the Moon period, reconstructed in the Earth period, will be further modified in the Jupiter period, reaching perfection in the Venus period. Globe D of the Venus period is located in the Desire world, see Diagram 8 in the Cosmo conception, hence neither a dense nor a vital body could be used as an instrument of consciousness, therefore the essences of the perfected dense and vital bodies are incorporated in the completed Desire body, the latter thus becoming a vehicle of transcendent qualities, marvelously adaptable and so responsive to the slightest wish of the indwelling spirit that in our present limitations, it is beyond our utmost conception. Yet the efficiency of even this splendid vehicle will be transcended when in the Vulcan period its essence, together with the essences of the dense and vital bodies, are added to the mind-body, which becomes the highest of man's vehicles, containing within itself the quintessence of all that was best in all the vehicles. 26. Part 3, Man's Desire Body in the Physical World. Chapter 1. From Infancy to Puberty. The vehicles of the newborn do not at once become active. The dense body is helpless for a long time after birth. It is the same with the forces working in the desire body. The passive feeling of physical pain is present, while the feeling of emotion is almost entirely absent. The child will, of course, show emotion on the slightest provocation, but the duration of that emotion is but momentary. It is all on the surface. The vital body of the plant builds leaf after leaf, carrying the stem higher and higher. Were it not for the macrocosmic desire body, it would keep on in that way indefinitely, but the macrocosmic desire body steps in at a certain point and checks further growth. The force that is not needed for further growth is then available for other purposes and is used to build the flower and the seed. In like manner, the human vital body, when the dense body comes under its sway, after the 7th year, makes the latter grow very rapidly, but about the 14th year the individual desire body is born from the womb of the macrocosmic desire body and is then free to work on its. 28. Dense body. The excessive growth is then checked and the force theretofore used for that purpose becomes available for propagation, that the human plant may flower and bring forth. Therefore the birth of the personal desire body marks the period of puberty. From this period the attraction towards the opposite sex is felt, being especially active and unrestrained in the third septenary period of life. From the 14th to the 21st year, because the restraining mind is then still unborn. It must not be imagined, however, that when the little body of a child has been born, the process of birth is completed. The dense physical body has had the longest evolution, and as a shoemaker who has worked at his trade for a number of years is more expert than an apprentice and can make better shoes and quicker, so also the spirit which has built many physical bodies produces them quickly, but the vital body is a later acquisition of the human being. Therefore, we are not so expert in building that vehicle. Consequently, it takes longer to construct that from the materials not used up in making the lining of the archetype, and the vital body is not born until the 7th year. Then the period of rapid growth commences. The desire body is a still late tradition of composite man, and is not brought to birth until the 14th year when the desire nature expresses itself most strongly during so-called hot youth, and the mind, which makes man man, does not come to birth until the 21st year. In law that age is recognized as the earliest time he is fitted to exercise a franchise. At the age of 14 we have the birth of the desire body, which marks the commencement of self-assertion. In earlier years the child regards itself more as belonging to a family and subordinate to the wishes of its parents than after the 14th year. The reason is this: in the throat of the fetus and the young child there is a gland called the thymus gland, which is largest before birth, then gradually diminishes through the years of childhood and finally disappears at ages which vary according to the characteristics of the child. Anatomists have been puzzled as to the function of this organ and have not yet come to any settled conclusion, but it has been suggested that before development of the red marrow bones, the child is not able to manufacture its own blood, and that therefore the thymus gland contains an essence, supplied by the parents, upon which the child may draw during infancy and childhood, till able to manufacture its own blood. That theory is approximately true, and as the family blood flows in the child, it looks upon itself as part of the family and not as an ego. But the moment it commences to manufacture its own blood, the ego asserts itself. It is no longer papa's girl or mama's boy. It has an identity of its own. Then comes the critical age when parents reap what they have sown. The mind has not yet been born, nothing holds the desire nature in check, and much, very much, depends upon how the child has been taught in earlier years and what example the parents have set. At this point in life, self-assertion, the feeling I am myself, is stronger than at any other time, and therefore authority should give place to advice. The parent should practice the utmost tolerance, for at no time in life is a human being as much in need of sympathy as during the 7 years from 14 to 21 when the desire nature is rampant and unchecked. Requires protection from the onslaughts of the desire world until at about the 14th year it is born at the time we call puberty, and the mind is not sufficiently ripe to be released from its protective cover until the man reaches his majority at about 21. These periods are only approximately correct, for each person differs from all others in regard to exact time periods, but those given are near enough. We saw that when the ego had finished its day in the school of life, the centrifugal force of repulsion caused it to throw off its dense vehicle at death, then the vital body, which is the next coarsest. Next in purgatory, the coarsest desire stuff accumulated by the ego as embodiment for its lowest desires was purged by this centrifugal force. In the higher realms, only the force of attraction holds sway and keeps the good by centripetal action, which tends to draw everything from the periphery to the center. This centripetal force of attraction also governs when the ego is coming to rebirth. We know that we can throw a stone farther than we can throw a feather. Therefore, the coarsest matter was thrown outwards after death by the force of repulsion, and for the same reason the coarsest material wherein the returning ego embodies the tendencies to evil is whirled inwards to the center by the centripetal force of attraction, with the result that when a child is born, all that is best and purest appears on the outside. The latent evil does not usually manifest until after is born at about the age of 14, and the currents in that vehicle commence to well outwards from the liver. At that time the ego commences to live its individual life and show what is within. Is born about the 14th year, at the time of puberty. That is the time the feelings and passions are beginning to exercise their power upon the young man or woman, as the womb of desire's tough which formerly protected the nascent desire body is removed. This is in most cases a trying time, and it is well for the youth who has learned to reverently look to parents or teachers, for they will be to him an anchor of strength against the inrush of the feelings. If he has been accustomed to take the statements of his elders on trust, and they have given him wise teaching, he will by now have developed an inherent sense of truth that will be a sure guide, but just in the measure that he has failed to do so will he be liable to go adrift. When a person dies in childhood in one life, he or she not infrequently remembers that life in the next body, because children under 14 years do not journey around the entire life cycle, which necessitates the building of a complete set of new vehicles. They simply pass into the upper regions of the desire world and there wait for a new embodiment, which usually takes place in from 1 to 20 years after death. When they return to birth, they bring with them the old mind and desire body. Chapter 2. ITS Appearance and Functions. In addition to the visible body and the vital body, we also have a body made of desire stuff from which we form our feelings and emotions. This vehicle also impels us to seek sense gratification. But, while the two instruments of which we have already spoken, are well organized, the desire body appears to spiritual sight as an ovoid cloud extending from 16 to 20 inches beyond the physical body. It is above the head and below the feet, so that our dense body sits in the center of this egg-shaped cloud as the yolk is in the center of an egg. The reason for the rudimentary state of this vehicle is that it has been added to the human constitution more recently than the bodies previously mentioned. Evolution of form may be likened to their manner in which the juices in the snail first condense into flesh and later become a hard shell. When our present visible body first germinated in the spirit, it was a thought form, but gradually it has become denser and more concrete until it is now a chemical crystallization. The vital body was next terminated by the spirit as a thought form and is in the third stage of concretion, which is etheric. Is a still later acquisition. That also was a thought form at its inception, but has now condensed to desire stuff. The mind, only recently received, is still but a mere cloudy thought form. 33. Arms and limbs, ears and eyes are not necessary to use the desire body, for it can glide through space more swiftly than wind without such means of locomotion as we require in this visible world. When viewed by spiritual sight, it appears that there are in this desire body a number of whirling vortices. It is a characteristic of desire stuff to be in constant motion, and from the main vortex in the region of the liver there is a constant outwelling flow which radiates towards the periphery of this egg-shaped body and returns to the center through a number of other vortices. Exhibits all the colors and shades which we know and a vast number of others which are indescribable in earthly language. Those colors vary in every person according to his characteristics and temperament, and they also vary from moment to moment as passing moods, fancies, or emotions are experienced by him. There is, however, in each one a certain basic color dependent upon the ruling star at the moment of his birth. The man in whose horoscope Mars is peculiarly strong usually has a crimson tint in his aura. Where Jupiter is the strongest planet, the prevailing tint seems to be a bluish tone, and so on with the other planets. There was a time in the Earth's past history when incrustation was not yet complete, and human beings of the time lived upon islands here and there, amid boiling seas. They had not yet evolved eyes or ears, but a little organ, the pineal gland, which anatomists have called the third eye, protruded through the back of the head and was a localized organ of feeling, which warned the man when he came too near a volcanic crater and thus enabled him to escape destruction. Since then the cerebral hemispheres have covered the pineal gland, and instead of a single organ of feeling, the whole body inside and out is sensitive to impacts, which of course is a much higher state of development. In every particle is sensitive to vibrations similar to those we call sight, sound, and feeling, and every particle is in incessant motion, rapidly swirling about so that in the same instant it may be at the top and bottom of and impart at all points to all the other particles a sensation of that which it has experienced. Thus every particle of desire stuff in this vehicle of ours will instantly feel any sensation experienced by any single particle. Therefore, the desire body is of an exceedingly sensitive nature, capable of most intense feelings and emotions. Is the vehicle of feelings and emotions which are always changing from moment to moment. Though it has been said that the ether which forms our soul body is in constant motion and mingles with the bloodstream, that motion is relatively slow compared to the rapidity of the current of the desire body. Desire stuff moves with inconceivable rapidity comparable only with light. The impulses of drive the blood through the system at varying rates of speed, according to the strength of the emotions. At present the materials of both the lower and the higher regions enter into the composition of the desire bodies of the great majority of mankind. None are so bad but that they have some good trait. This is expressed in their materials of the higher regions which we find in their desire bodies. But, on the other hand, very, very few are so good that they do not use some of the materials of the lower regions. In the same way that the planetary vital and desire bodies interpenetrate the dense material of the earth, as we saw in the illustration of the sponge, the sand, and the water, so the vital and desire bodies interpenetrate the dense body of plant, animal, and man. But during the life of man his desire body is not shaped like his dense and vital bodies. After death it assumes that shape. During life it has the appearance of a luminous ovoid which, in waking hours, completely surrounds the dense body, as the albumin does the yolk of an egg. It extends from 12 to 16 inches beyond the dense body. In this desired body there are a number of sense centers, but, in the great majority of people, they are latent. It is the awakening of these centers of perception that corresponds to the opening of the blind man's eyes in our former illustration. The matter in the human desire body is an incessant motion of inconceivable rapidity. There is in it no settled place for any particle, as in the dense body. The matter that is at the head one moment may be at the feet in the next and back again. There are no organs in the desire body, as in the dense and vital bodies, but there are centers of perception, which, when active, appear as vortices, always remaining in the same relative position to the dense body, most of them about the head. In the majority of people they are mere eddies and are of no use as centers of perception. They may be awakened in all, however, but different methods produce different results. In the involuntary clairvoyant developed along improper, negative lines, these vortices turn from right to left, or in the opposite direction to the hands of a clock, counterclockwise. In of the properly trained voluntary clairvoyant, they turn in the same direction as the hands of a clock, clockwise, glowing with exceeding splendor, far surpassing the brilliant luminosity of the ordinary desire body. These centers furnish him with means for the perception of things in the desire world, and he sees, and investigates as he wills, while the person whose centers turn counterclockwise is like a mirror, which reflects what passes before it. Such a person is incapable of reaching out for information. The above is one of the fundamental differences between a medium and a properly trained clairvoyant. It is impossible for most people to distinguish between the two, yet there is one infallible rule that can be followed by anyone. No genuinely developed seer will ever exercise this faculty for money or its equivalent, nor will he use it to gratify curiosity, but only to help humanity. Chapter 3. Effect of emotions on contour and color. Christ said, "Let your light shine." To the spiritual vision each human being appears as a flame of light, variously colored according to temperament, and of greater or less brilliancy in proportion to purity of character. Science has discovered that all matter is in a state of flux, that the particles which compose our bodies continually decay and are eliminated from the system, to be replaced by others which remain for a short time until they also decompose. Likewise our moods, emotions, and desires change with every passing moment, the old giving way to the new in an interminable succession. Therefore, they also must be composed of matter and subject to laws similar to those which govern visible physical substances. Let us now see how changes under the varying feelings, desires, passions, and emotions, so that we may learn to build wisely and well the mystic temple wherein we dwell. When we study one of the so-called physical sciences, such as anatomy or architecture, which deals with tangible things, our task is facilitated by the fact that we have words which describe the things whereof we treat, but even then the mental picture conceived by a word differs with each individual. When we speak of a bridge, one may make a mental picture of a million-dollar iron structure, another may think of a plank across a streamlet. The difficulty which we experience in conveying accurate impressions of our meaning increases apace when we attempt to convey ideas concerning nature's intangible forces, such as electricity. We measure the strength of the current in volts, the volume in amperes, and the resistance of the conductor in ohms, but, as a matter of fact, such terms are only inventions to cover up our ignorance of the matter. We all know what a pound of coffee is, but the world's greatest scientist has no more accurate conception of what the volts, amperes, and ohms are of which he so learnedly discourses than the schoolboy who hears these terms for the first time. What wonder then that superphysical subjects are described in vague and often misleading terms, for we have no words in any physical language which will accurately describe these subjects. And one is almost helpless and utterly at a loss for descriptive terms wherewith to express oneself regarding them. If it were possible to throw colored moving pictures of the desired body upon the screen and to show how this restless vehicle changes contour and color according to the emotions, even then it would not give an adequate understanding to anyone who was not capable of seeing these things himself, for the vehicles of every single human being differ from the vehicles of all others in the way they respond to certain emotions. That which causes one to feel intense love, hate, anger, fear, or any other emotion may leave another entirely untouched. The writer has a number of times watched crowds for the purpose of comparison in this respect, and has always found something startlingly new and different from what had hitherto been observed. On one occasion, a demagogue was endeavoring to incite a labor union to strike. He was very much excited himself, and though the basic color of deep orange was perceivable, it was for the time being almost obliterated by a scarlet color of the brightest hue. The contour of his desire body was like the body of a porcupine with its quills sticking out. There was a strong element of opposition in the place, and as he talked one could clearly distinguish the two factions by the colors of their respective auras. One set of men showed the scarlet of anger, but in the other set this color was intermingled with the gray, the color of fear. It was also remarkable that, although the gray men were in the majority, the others carried the day, for each timid one believed himself alone or at least with a very few supporters, and was therefore afraid to vote for or express his opinion. If one who was able to see this condition had been present and had gone to each one who manifested in his aura the signs of dissension, and had given him the assurance that he was one of a majority, the tide would have turned in the opposite direction. It is often so in human affairs, for at the present time the majority are unable to see beneath the surface of the physical body and thus to perceive the true state of the thoughts and feelings of others. On another occasion, a revival meeting was visited where many thousands were present to hear a speaker of national repute. At the beginning of the meeting, it was evident from the state of the auras of the people that the great majority had come there with no other purpose than to have a good time and see some fun. The thoughts, feelings, and emotions connected with the ordinary life of each were plainly visible, but in a number a certain darkish blue color showed an attitude of worry. It seemed that they had had some disappointment in life and were very uneasy. When the speaker appeared, a curious phenomenon took place. Desire bodies are usually in a state of restless motion, but at that moment it seemed as if the whole vast audience must have held its breath in an attitude of expectancy, for the varied color play in the individual desire bodies ceased and the basic orange hue was plainly perceptible for an instant. Presently each commenced his emotional activities as before, while the prelude was being played. Then commenced the singing of hymns, and this showed the value and effect of music. For as all united in singing identical words to the same tune, the same rhythmic vibrations which surged through all these desire bodies seemed to blend them and make them, for the time being, almost one. Quite a number were sitting in the scoffer's seat, so to speak, refusing to sing and unite with the others. To the spiritual sight they appeared as men of steel, clothed in an armor of that color, and from each one, without exception, went out a vibration which said so much plainer than mere words could ever have done, "Leave me alone, you shall not touch me." Something from within had drawn them there, but they were mortally afraid of giving way, and therefore their whole aura expressed this steel color of fear, which is an armor of the soul against outside interference. When the first song was ended, the unity of color and vibration lapsed almost immediately, each one taking anew his customary thought atmosphere, and had nothing more been done, each would have lapsed into his habitual inner life. But the evangelist, though not able to see this, knew from past experience that his audience was not yet ripe, and a succession of songs were therefore sung to the accompaniment of clapping hands, beating drums, and gesticulations from the leader, aided by a trained chorus. This brought the scattered souls again into a bond of harmony. Gradually people were overwhelmed with religious fervor, and the unity necessary for the next effort was established. From the music, the leader's hand clapping, and the stirring appeal of the songs, that vast audience had become as one, for the men of steel, the grey-tinted scoffers who thought themselves too wise to be fooled, when their emotion was really fear, were a negligible part in that vast congregation. All were then attuned as the many strings upon one great instrument, and the evangelist who appeared before them was a master artist at playing upon their emotions.